Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Rome's Colosseum lights up to celebrate New Mexico's abolition of the death penalty. The Catholic broadcasting network Radio Veritas Asia marks its 40th anniversary. But first, Pope Benedict XVI marks his 82nd birthday. Pope Benedict XVI celebrated his 82nd birthday on Thursday in the relative peace and quiet of his summer residence at Castel Gandolfo, nestled in the Alban Hills to the south of Rome. The Pope has been spending a few days there to rest following his busy schedule of masses and other liturgical events during Holy Week and Easter. On Wednesday morning, however, he was back briefly in St. Peter's Square to the delight of thousands of pilgrims and tourists who were determined not to let the Holy Father's birthday go unnoticed. After listening to his catechesis on the resurrection in several different languages, they struck up a rousing chorus of birthday greetings for the following day. This Sunday, of course, Pope Benedict also marks the 4th anniversary of his election to the See of Peter. On that Sunday morning, he'll recite the Regina Caeli for pilgrims gathered in the courtyard at Castel Gandolfo before returning to the Vatican later in the evening. But as we at Vatican Radio add our own good wishes to the Holy Father for his birthday and this anniversary of his pontificate, my colleague Chris Altieri takes a look back at some of the key events in the life of Joseph Ratzinger.
On this day, 82 years ago, in the tiny Bavarian village of Machtel am Inn, a policeman and his wife welcomed their second son, whom they named Joseph. It was Holy Saturday, 1927, and on the same day he was born, the man who would become Pope Benedict XVI received the sacrament of baptism. His early life was signed by the ascendance of the Nazi power in his native and beloved Germany, and the clouds of war shadowed his adolescence but did not deter the young man from pursuing his discernment of a vocation to the priesthood. He was ordained with his elder brother, Georg, on 29th June 1951, and soon embarked on a career in academia that would see him take a leading role in the great and unsettling renewal of the Church in the second half of the 20th century. Today, on Pope Benedict's 82nd birthday, the director of the press office of the Holy See, Jesuit Father Federico Lombardi, offered best wishes to the Holy Father, saying it is his hope that Pope Benedict may long continue in his ministry, which is a profound one of help to men and women of this day in encountering God. Quite clearly, at the center of his concern, says Father Lombardi, is the task of bringing men and women to God, and of bringing God to humanity through a great personal love for Christ.
Riportare gli uomini a Dio, Dio agli uomini, e attraverso un grande amore personale per Cristo.
Father Lombardi's was just one in a chorus of voices wishing well to the Holy Father on this his 82nd birthday. We gathered some of those voices in St. Peter's Square today.
We're wishing Pope Benedict a happy birthday. We're a big group from Canada and we're having a great time here.
Ja, ich wünsche unserem Papst Benedikt dem 16. alles Gute und Gottes Segen zu seinem Geburtstag.
Hello there, Pope. I'd just like to say happy birthday and I hope it's a good one.
Happy birthday.
Muchas felicidades, Santo Padre. Lo encomendamos mucho y muchos años más de vida al servicio de la Iglesia.
From Montreal, we wish you a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, all the best.
Happy birthday, have a great day.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Bien, joyeux anniversaire, très Saint-Père.
Et la France a confiance en vous.
I, as a priest, feel proud to identify myself with His Holiness. And as you mark his birthday today, I say, long life, bravo to His Holiness.
Thanks to Chris Altieri, who was talking to those pilgrims in St. Peter's Square on Thursday, Pope Benedict's 82nd birthday. One of Rome's most famous landmarks, the Colosseum, was lit up on Wednesday evening to celebrate the U.S. state of New Mexico's decision to repeal the death penalty. The lay Catholic community of St. Egidio here in Rome began the practice of lighting up the Colosseum, once the Roman Emperor's favorite spot for executions, to celebrate each step along the way towards a worldwide abolition of capital punishment. A special lighting ceremony also took place in December 2007, when the United Nations General Assembly called for a worldwide moratorium on the death penalty. On Wednesday morning, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson and the Archbishop of Santa Fe, Michael Sheehan, led a delegation which met with Pope Benedict after the general audience in St. Peter's Square, before going on to the lighting ceremony at the Colosseum later in the day. Governor Richardson also found time to talk with my colleague Charles Collins about why he decided to sign this law abolishing the death penalty in the state of New Mexico last month.
Well, it was the toughest decision in my political life. I changed my position because I had supported the death penalty. Why? Because I think life imprisonment without parole is worse than death and a suitable punishment. Secondly, the fact that America is increasingly isolated on this issue with the rest of the world going in another direction. The fact that it's mainly minorities on death row. DNA evidence has been faulty. The fact that in the last 10 years there have been 130 exonerations. All of that, plus my own church, my archbishop, influenced me to sign the bill. And looking back, the fact that New Mexicans supported by over 60%, I believe was the right choice, but it was a very tough decision.
You mentioned that New Mexicans supported it by over 60%. This is a change in the view of the people of New Mexico over the last several years. Do you think the same reasons that made you change your mind is what affected everyone else in the state?
I believe so. The fact that there have been so many mistakes, the fact that the state is not perfect in judging whether an execution should take place, there's faulty evidence, the fact that life imprisonment without parole is a suitable punishment, the fact that American points of views on this issue are changing. The world is far ahead of us on this issue, Latin America, Europe, most nations in the third world have abolished the death penalty, and we're alone with a few other countries that are considered repressive. So I think America's mood on this issue is changing. It's becoming more progressive and more oriented towards abolishing the death penalty.
Recently, when we in Europe have heard about successes dealing with the death penalty, they've almost exclusively been about Supreme Court cases, limiting who can be executed, for example. Do you feel more satisfied that this happened through a legislative process than a judicial process?
Yes, the fact that the people voted through their elected representatives, through a legislature in New Mexico, through a governor that could sign or veto the bill. Public opinion in New Mexico changed, and it went straight to their elected representatives. This is decisions that should be made by the people, by legislative bodies, not by single judges or judicial tribunals. This is a moral issue.
New Jersey also recently abolished the death penalty, and most of the states that have the death penalty haven't used it in years. Is this a national trend?
Well, there's a national trend because so many states know that there's real vulnerabilities. You take Illinois when there were so many exonerations and mistakes and faulty DNA evidence. I think the states are realizing that it's costing more to execute somebody, that there's faulty evidence, that perhaps what is more morally correct and still is strong punishment for a heinous crime life imprisonment without parole. I went to my prison in New Mexico the day I made the decision, and I concluded that life without parole in a cell 23 out of 24 hours was a worse punishment than death. So I felt that my conscience was clear.
Is this a feeling shared also by victims' families? What has been the response from victims' families to this law?
Well, it's mixed. I mean, there are victims' families that are not happy with me. And it was very tough for me because I'd gotten very close to a family of a police officer. And I don't think they're happy with my decision. But I didn't, for instance, affect their case because my signing of the bill was prospective. And secondly, I felt that saying to them that life imprisonment without parole is a very strong punishment, perhaps worse than death, for the individual that killed their son in the line of duty.
Now here in Europe, of course, here with the San Egidio community, the lighting of the Colosseum, the death penalty is such a big issue here. Talking about its immorality, talking about trying to abolish it throughout the world. Why do you think the attitude is so different in Europe and other parts of the world than it is in the United States?
Well, I believe that Europe public opinion on this moral issue is ahead of America's. And the fact that in America we have 50 states with strong local governments, strong state government. And so I think it's easier for a national legislature to abolish the death penalty in a European country than it is in the United States. But I still do think that America is behind even third world countries on this issue, that morally and financially and internationally, I believe it's best to get rid of the death penalty. And I'm glad America, through what we did in New Mexico, is starting to catch on. The fact that a conservative state in the West was the first to take this decision, I think harbors well for the future in making it a national policy for America not to have a death penalty. It's going to take some time, but I'm glad New Mexico is leading the way.
And finally, what role did the Catholic Church have in promoting this law in New Mexico?
Well, the Catholic Church led on this issue. My Archbishop influenced me. The Catholic Church lobbied members of the legislature. In a Catholic state, the Catholic Church is very powerful. And we have a charismatic Archbishop who put his prestige on the line and pushed the state in the right direction.
The Catholic Church took its lead from the late Pope John Paul II, who often spoke out against the use of the death penalty, including during a memorable visit to St. Louis, Missouri in 1999. During a mass in the Trans World Sports Dome there, the former pontiff called state executions cruel and unnecessary and said modern society has the means of protecting itself without definitively denying criminals the chance to reform. Archbishop Michael Sheehan of Santa Fe told us it's not just American Catholics who have been persuaded by the Church's teachings on this issue.
The Church has spoken out strongly, encouraging a change of mind, and many people have listened to our message, and not only the Church, but many people of goodwill, like the lady who introduced the bill repealing the death penalty. She has been working at this for 10 years. And she's not Catholic, but she has a strong opinion about the dignity of humanity, and she opposes the death penalty. And I think our message between the religious leaders and the secular leaders, this has changed the opinion of the majority of people in New Mexico to be against the death penalty. So it was over a period of time. It didn't happen overnight. And even the governor, I think we had to work with him, talk to him, encourage him, and gradually he too changed his mind. So it was a gradual progress. It was a gradual effort to have a new opinion come into the state. And now the majority of the people agree with the decision of the legislature.
A Accompanying the Archbishop and the Governor to Rome for this ceremony was the director of the New Mexico Coalition to Repeal the Death Penalty, Vicky Elke, who's been campaigning for many years to get rid of state-sponsored executions throughout the United States. She talked to my colleague Francesca Sabatinelli about recent developments that are helping to change many Americans' minds about this important pro-life issue.
It was not easy at all. We started working on this 12 years ago, and what changed this year for us was a variety of things. One thing was we had some new state senators that were elected in November that gave us more votes in the Senate. We had already passed the House the last three sessions, so we kept getting stuck in the Senate. So we were able to get past the Senate this year, and as the governor said, I mean, just a couple of months ago, he supported the death penalty, and so we had to really work on him. And so what we did was we gave him every bit of information we could find about the death penalty. We showed him that it was a different issue than it was 2 years ago. We'd had 10 countries that have abolished it in the last 2 years. One state, the first state, we're only the second state in the country to abolish the death penalty since the 60s.
Yeah, which were the issue that convinced the governor?
You know, I think the biggest issue that convinced him was the 130 exonerees from death row in the country. These were people that spent decades on death row and they were innocent. And we took the exonerees, we met with the governor, we had him talk to the exonerees and find out how they were railroaded. And I think that was one of the biggest reasons. He saw the prosecutorial misconduct, the police misconduct, the lying eyewitnesses, the fabricated evidence, and he saw this over and over in these cases. And in fact, I wanted to let him know that we had 130, but as of yesterday in the United States, we have 131 who have been exonerated from death row. We have one more person from death row exonerated yesterday.
Oh, that's great.
It's wonderful. Another one from Illinois.
What about New Mexican citizens? What kind of mind do they have on this issue?
Well, we did a statewide poll, and we asked likely New Mexican voters how they felt about this. And 64% supported repealing the death penalty, replacing it with life without parole, and providing restitution to the victims' families. And that is why, you know, we have that groundswell of grassroots support in New Mexico for it. This is what the citizens wanted. The governor did a poll, and he found three-quarters of the people that called into his office said they wanted the death penalty repealed.
So this success, now you're going to try to have this success in other states?
Absolutely, absolutely. The abolition movement in the United States is a very close-knit community. We all work very closely together, and any lessons we learn in one state, we're taking to the next state.
Which is the next state?
There's several of them out there. Montana, Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Massachusetts. We've got a lot of them out there.
Thanks there to Vicky Elke, director of the New Mexico Coalition to Repeal the Death Penalty, talking to my colleague Francesca Sabatinelli. And earlier you heard the New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson and the Archbishop of Santa Fe, Michael Sheehan. Radio Veritas, the Asian Catholic Broadcasting Network, founded in the Philippines' capital, Manila, is this week marking the 40th anniversary of its foundation. Set up in April 1969 and blessed by Pope Paul VI during his pastoral visit to Asia the following year, the radio station played a crucial role in the peaceful revolution that overthrew Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos in 1986. While it is still owned by the Archdiocese of Manila, the network has now expanded throughout the Southeast Asian region and broadcasts in some 15 different languages, sharing a Christian vision with listeners of many different cultures and religions. To mark this 40th anniversary, the Radio Veritas offices in Manila are hosting a symposium on Catholic broadcasting in Asia, celebrating past achievements and looking ahead to the new challenges of this digital era. Among the guest speakers at the two-day event is the president of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, Archbishop Claudio Celi. He dropped into our studios before his departure to tell me more about this landmark celebration. Archbishop Celi, you're off to Asia for a very important jubilee celebration, this 40th anniversary of the founding of Radio Veritas in the Philippines. Tell us a bit about it.
It is a relevant celebration. Why? Because we are going to remember and to thank our Lord for the good things that Radio Veritas Asia is doing for all Asia. As you know, the radio is posted in Manila, but is broadcasting in 16 languages to all Asia. And in deep connection with the Vatican Radio, also, is offering programs to many countries of Asia in an interreligious dialogue, at the same time presenting the gospel message. And so they invited me, and I thought that was important to be there, to testify how the Holy See is appreciating what Radio Veritas Asia is doing, and to support, to promote such a presence. And so I think that it was good for us to be with them, with the Asian bishops, because, as you know, Radio Veritas Asia is belonging to the Federation of the Asian Bishops. And they are the responsible of the activities of the radio. Consider, for example, that Radio Veritas Asia now has, I think, 4 hours a day in Chinese, in Mandarin. They have broadcastings, programs for Vietnam, I think almost 3 hours a day. And many other countries in Pakistan, Bangladesh, India, on different regions of India, and the populations of Thailand, Burma, and so on. And so I think that is a moment to thank our Lord for what is done in a good way, and also to promote and to see what can be done in the future.
You mentioned this important role of interfaith dialogue there.
Exactly.
In Asia. It's also clearly an important way of promoting justice, peace, and reconciliation in many of these countries.
But that is the way. You know, I think that this is also the meaning of a Catholic radio. The main task of a Catholic radio is certainly to announce the gospel to the Catholic population, but also to those who don't know the gospel or the church. But at the same time, we have to install, to promote a dialogue of life. And here again, the church that was defined, was declared many years ago, expert in humanity, can give a contribution, an important contribution, to the promotion of peace, of understanding, of a respectful dialogue. You know, there were the necessary clarifications about an interreligious dialogue, but about the social aspects of any religion, we must have a real dialogue and to promote it. And so the church is involved in such a dimension of our presence. They are in of such a religious aspect and dialogue.
Welcome and listen in to a radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to feel those good vibrations coming from the joy that is love can bring.
There were, of course, many who predicted the demise of radio, first of all with the arrival of television and then even more so of the internet technologies. That's not at all the case there in Asia. It's a very important means of communication still, isn't it?
But as you know, also in Europe or in some developed countries, radio is recuperating. I think that which is declining is the television, in a certain sense. Radio is occupying again a primary role in the life of the man, of the human person today. When you are going to work in your car, you're listening at radio. When you are moving in the house, on many occasions, is radio, because radio is creating an atmosphere in your life. You know, it's not attractive as the television is, but it also is obliging you to watch at the screen. Radio is surrounding you. And I think that these are all positive values for the busy day of a human being in our culture. And so I think that radio is recuperating some post in this rating. And but you know, we must consider always and more and more what a Catholic radio has to do. You know, for me, it's really a dialogue of life. Today, people are so oppressed, are tired. They don't know where to go and how to move. And a radio and a program in the radio must approach humanity in this aspect of their life. And so for me, this is the great task that we are facing today. Yeah. To work with people.
My thanks there to Archbishop Claudio Celi, President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. We'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow, so do join us then if you can. In the meantime, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.